Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very tall leader from Antigua, Dame Giselle Isaac. Giselle, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Dame Isaac is the chairperson of the main opposition party in Antigua. And given the kind of work that she's been doing, she's been recognized, awarded, and felicitated several times. So Giselle, let me first ask you the question of what inspired you to enter politics and who were your role models in this journey?
Oh, I don't know that I was inspired to enter politics as much as I was thrust into politics, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. Even though I studied government and politics in graduate school, I never foresaw that I would end up in the roles that I have ended up in. So I was chosen in 2004. I was selected, asked to be Speaker of the House of Representatives. Prior to that, I had been, you could say, a political activist.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff going on in Antigua and Barbuda that bothers me. And so as a journalist by training, I began writing, I began speaking. And then when the government changed in 2004, I was asked to serve as Speaker of the House, which I did for 10 years.
Wow.
And I didn't consider that politics, actually. But then after the government changed again, and my party was out of power, and I began being subjected to political victimization, I was thrust into politics. Okay. And here I am.
Fascinating. So from being the Speaker of the House of Representatives to becoming the chairperson of the main opposition party in Antigua, what were some key highlights of your journey?
Most of my journey has been legal battle, ideological battles. The journey has not been smooth. The journey has not been smooth. But people believe that I was ideally positioned to go into politics. And funny enough, I applied to become the public relations officer of the party. And the seniors said, no, after you have chaired the House of Representatives, we think you should apply for the position of chairman.
Wow.
And so I did. And, I won. And I took it from there. But as I said, the journey has not been smooth because being leader of an opposition party in a small, sometimes vicious arena comes with a lot of bumps and bruises. And I've sustained my fair share of those. But it has been rewarding in that it is also a form of patriotism, fighting for for what you believe to be the good of your country. And so even though the journey has hurt, it's been a rewarding one.
Fascinating. And can you talk about a few of the challenges you have faced during the transition of government in 2014 and how it affected your personal and professional life?
Well, almost immediately after the government change in 2014, 1 month after, I lost my job. My day job had been at the Board of Education as a general manager there, I guess you could say. And a month after the government changed, I got a letter that said I was suspended for a month while they investigated the operations of the board. And so I went home, and after the month was up, I went back to work and found all the locks had been changed.
Wow.
And and then began my journey. I started fighting them in the courts. And then the following year, when I became the chairperson of the political party, I started being arrested.
Wow.
And so over the course of 11 months, I was arrested 3 times, charged, and had my passport taken. I was mandated to sign in at the police station 3 times a week so that they would know that I had not skipped the country. And of course, I could not get employment because in a small society, if you were at odds with the government, no employer is going to touch you. And so I had to get very creative in terms of living. And with the help of good friends and family, I've been able to survive. So yes, I was paraded on the high street in handcuffs.
Wow.
I think I was being made an example of, a political example. And so my life changed drastically, radically, in ways that I could not imagine. When you are in your own country and you're unable to make a living, it's difficult, and you're unable to leave and go somewhere else to get a job because you literally can't travel.
Right.
So I felt like I was hemmed in on all sides, but yes, I've
Amazing.
survived it.
Amazing, amazing. And Giselle, can you share a moment during your political career that you consider a defining or pivotal moment for you personally?
In 2000 and hold on, I can't remember. I think it was 2006. I went to Australia for a conference, and there was a reception one night. This is a conference of the Commonwealth parliamentarians, and I went to a reception one night, the governor's mansion, and I went out into the garden, and just on the other side of the garden is the Opera House, the famous Sydney Opera House. And I remember thinking, my God, how did I get here? From, a village, a humble village in Antigua and Barbuda. I never envisioned this. I never saw this. And I remember literally standing in the garden and talking to my ancestors and saying to them, I bet you never knew this is how far I'd come,
Amazing.
literally and figuratively. And that is a moment that stood out for me. I don't know why, but that moment in particular.
Fascinating. What a powerful moment that you've just defined for us. Thank you. My next question for you is that what are some of the key issues you believe are currently facing Antigua, and how do you plan to address them as the leader of the opposition?
Well, I'm not the leader of the opposition, I'm the chairman of the opposition
Kevin.
party. So we
Kevin.
actually have a leader of the opposition in
Okay.
parliament. But the issues facing Antigua and Barbuda at this particular time, I think we are losing sovereignty. As a small, when I say small, I mean really micro state. We're only 108 square miles on this island and 62 square miles on the other. We are losing sovereignty in that this administration in particular has run our economy on the reef. And we have found ourselves highly dependent on outside assistance, in particular from China. I think we are probably the most heavily Chinese saturated island in the Eastern Caribbean. And so people worry about that, not only in terms of our borrowing, but in terms of the penetration of the economy. We have a significant Chinese population, which has taken over quite a number of businesses. And so business people are feeling squeezed and anxious. And we as taxpayers are wondering, well, how will we ever get out of the hole of debt that we're in? So that's one of our huge problems. Of course, we have environment problems. We're a small country, as I said, and this is only March, and the heat already is intense. So global warming is really affecting us. We're not having rain as we used to, and so farmers are having a hard time, and we are worried about food security because if the farmers cannot produce, then we're dependent almost entirely on imports. And as we've seen through COVID-19 and the Ukraine-Russian war, when the world is at war, these little countries really, really suffer.
Correct.
So those are some of our pressing concerns, and of course the corruption in our government. But I guess everybody says that, right?
Well, a lot of countries are going through, so but my next question is for you is that as the chairperson of the main opposition party, what is your vision for Antigua?
I envision an Antigua that is more fair and more just than it is currently. We have a lot of people who are struggling financially, and we need to help those people more than we're able to. We're not just to the point of subsidizing their basic living, but giving them opportunities for a better tomorrow. For instance, right now we have a scholarship program. The government has a scholarship program. And so it will assist you to go and study, but you come back and the opportunities are not there. And so our brightest people get these opportunities to study abroad and they stay away. And so we're not advancing as we ought to because We're not able to employ them or deploy them. And as a result, we our economy stagnated. Our young people feel a sense of hopelessness unless they can get out of Antigua. I would really like to do something about that. And I believe that our party has the plans and the more important, the motivation, the political will to see these things happen, to keep our young people at home and hand over to them the reins of the economy and the reins of political power to advance us to another level. Those are things I'd like to see.
Yeah, very interesting. But a question I should have asked you earlier is that what are some of the primary drivers of the economy of Antigua?
The primary driver of the economy is tourism.
Tourism.
Tourism and services. When I say services, banking and insurance and that kind of thing. We have some offshore banking here and some cryptocurrency here and so on. But agriculture, which we believe ought to play a larger role, is actually shrinking. We have very little manufacturing, so it's mostly tourism. And the drawback of that is that the tourist season really runs from about October, November until March, April. And then after that, you're kind of in an economic drought. So this is why I'm saying we need to change the whole landscape, the economic landscape. So tourism is king here.
Amazing. And I'm sure there will be great minds who can say that, in the off-peak period for tourists, there must be other things that you can do as a country. But my next question for you, Giselle, is in what ways has your experience as a political prisoner influenced your leadership style and your approach to politics?
Well, it has made me an advocate for justice more than an advocate for peace. You know, everybody, most people like things to be quiet and level, and you don't rock the boat and you don't give your party or your country a bad name by agitating. I believe in agitating. I believe wherever there is injustice, as they say, injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. And because we are such a small society, when there's injustice to one person, a whole family can suffer by extension, you know? And so it has made me more conscious of those who are living outside the margins and people who are without the means to fight. I mean, luckily, I have had the means, enough means financially and friends and influence that I've been able to fight all the way to the Privy Council and win. But what about the smaller man who doesn't have that? What happens to his life? What happens to his children's life? You know? So, but my experiences have made me very conscious of that and made me want more than ever to see a just society and not just a peaceful society. And yeah, that has influenced how I feel about my own role in politics and the role my party should play in national politics.
Very well said. Another question that I've often asked many political leaders from around the world who I speak to is how do you balance between personal convictions and political strategy in
Oh,
your
that's the
role?
hardest thing. That's the hardest thing, Ash. That is the hardest thing. Because personally, everybody's influenced by family, education, religion, and so on. And so you develop your principles on that basis. And then you get into politics where sometimes you ask yourself, are there any principles at all? Is everything expedient? And sometimes you have to have a hard talk with yourself as to whether you are being effective, whether you are compromising your principles, if you can marry the two, or if you should just get out of this business altogether. But I remain conflicted. I am conflicted still. It's something I struggle with
And
because.
it takes a very strong mind to be able to accept the fact that you're conflicted. Thank you. My next question, Giselle, is how do you see the role of women in politics, particularly in the Caribbean, evolving in the coming years?
Some Caribbean countries have gone much further ahead than Antigua and Barbuda has. I think of Grenada, for instance. Grenada is probably about 60 years by now with women in politics, including in parliament. We have had very few, and our first woman in parliament was only in 2004 from my party. We have had women in other posts. I've been speaker. We've had a female president of the Senate, and we've had a female governor general, and so on. And I think that these positions, female commissioner of police, and I think my party in particular has done very well in terms of, I don't want to say elevating women, but putting them in positions of influence and respect. But I still, in Antigua and Barbuda, think we have a long way to go with men accepting women as equals in the political arena. And it is not so much the colleagues, funny enough, not the parliamentarians, but the population. I still think we still have some way to go. So other Caribbean countries, you know, when I was a female parliamentarian, they have reported some of these same issues. One of the concerns is that women very often were put in almost like ceremonial roles and not those of real power. So you'd hardly ever find a minister of finance or a minister of public works being a woman. And we believe it's because politics is transactional, and women are kind of taught not to engage in transactional relationships. It's considered, I hate to say this, almost what a form of prostitution. And so they probably think women are too soft for certain ministries when we are very capable. I mean, if you look at the
Absolutely.
University of the West Indies, for instance, and the number of graduates who are women, the percentage of female graduates, the world over, women are very educated, women are very
Absolutely.
experienced, but political power in the Caribbean for women seems to be the last hurdle.
Wow. And what are your thoughts on the future of democracy in Antigua and the wider Caribbean region?
In democracy, in Antigua and Barbuda, I fear for democracy. As a matter of fact, I was on radio just earlier this week, and I said, all the institutions of democracy, the courts, the governor general, the electoral commission, the commissioner of police, so many of them just seem to have fallen under the sway and the control of the political directorate that you're knocking on doors and nobody's opening. Something goes wrong in the society, you make an appeal, you write a letter, and you're lucky if you get an answer even acknowledging your letter. And this comes from as high as the Governor General's office. There were egregious things happening. You believe that a commission of inquiry is warranted or some kind of investigation, and they will tell you, oh, there's an investigation going on. You never even hear about the report. You never see the report. It's just swept under the carpet. And so I think people are starting to feel like they're on their own, that there are no authority figures, there are no institutions that are on the side of the people. And all we are good for is to vote every 5 years, elect a government, and then after that, you know, hands off. We will do as we like. We will sell your lands as you like. We will pollute your environment as we like. You have nothing to say because you are only a voter, you're only a taxpayer. That's the feeling I have right now in Antigua. And I know some of the other islands, like Dominica, will tell you the same thing.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you. And given all the amazing experience you have, how do you plan to leverage your experiences and lessons to benefit Antigua and its people moving forward?
That really does not depend on me so much. That depends on almost what the society allows you to do in terms of politics. I'm not an elected person. I am, well, elected in the sense that I'm not a parliamentarian. And in political parties, faces and figures come and go. But as a writer, because I'm a journalist first, and as a writer and public speaker, I have determined that whether I'm in politics or out of politics, I will be writing, I will be speaking, and whatever influence I have, I will be using for the greater good.
Great response. So, time for two more questions for you. Do you believe that the international community should play a role in supporting fair governance and democracy in nations like Antigua?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I believe that. And the irony here is that most people believe it, but it's not happening. The thing that has happened instead is that we have become a people that sits on its hands, hoping that a superpower will come in and save us. So, we keep looking and saying, oh, when the Americans hear about this, especially if it has to do with any kind of financial chicanery, we always believe that the United States government is going to swoop in and do something about the things that we are too cowardly or not convicted enough to do something about. So we are overly reliant on outside help that really is not coming. But I do think they have an obligation because, especially where we are situated in the Caribbean, we are so close to the United States. We were once called the back door of the United States. And because of the geopolitical issues between, say, the United States and China, and since China has such a huge influence here, a lot of people have said they're amazed that, China has been allowed to penetrate this far into the US backyard without anything happening. So we believe, yes, where you see an abuse, I don't think you have to wait until it gets to crisis proportions. And if we look at what's happening in places like Gaza and Ukraine and even Haiti across the street from us, these are the lessons we ought to learn from and have interventions earlier rather than allowing the humanitarian crises that we see happening now.
Well said. And my last question for you, what legacy do you hope to leave behind in Antigua's political landscape? And what message would you like to convey to future generations of leaders?
The legacy I want to leave behind is that I fought. I did not capitulate. I did not give in. There's this saying, oh, you can't fight City Hall and win. You can fight City Hall and win. I've been fighting a government for the last 10 years and I have been winning. And I will continue to fight if new battles come up. And I believe that I can win. So I want them to look at me as an example of what one person can achieve, what one woman can achieve, especially since they consider us the weaker sex. I want them to know there's nothing weak about women.
Correct. Yes.
And I believe I've left something of a legacy already in my other life as a writer and as a public speaker, but I want my political legacy to be that I stood up and that there is power in standing up, that you can buck the system because digitalizer did it. So it can be done.
Very well said. And on that note, Giselle, thank you so much for speaking to me about your own amazing journey. Thank you for being so open about some of the challenges your nation faces, about some of the things that you can do for your nation. I'm sure people will listen to your conversation, people will listen to your thoughts, and I can only say wish you lots of success and
Thank you.
lots of wins coming forward, going
Thank
forward.
you. I
Thank you again
appreciate
and
that.
good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.